Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you, and welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program over News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Representative Jesse Topper of the 78th Pennsylvania Legislative District. Wow, that's a lot to say. When Bedford County Speaks continues.
At the turn of the 19th century, Bedford was a small but growing frontier town in the southwestern Alleghenies. The opening of the West had begun, and along with it were families eager to start a new life. Among them was Demetrius Gallitzin, an unassuming but dynamic Roman Catholic priest whose mission was to evangelize the region for the Son of God, Jesus Christ. Father Gallitzin was eager to form a new church in this bustling town called Bedford. With the assistance of some willing Catholics, in 1816 he established a new parish called St. Thomas the Apostle. The new church on East Street at the end of the borough was small but functional. Years, and two more church buildings later, St. Thomas the Apostle would grow to a major moral and community force in Bedford. St. Thomas the Apostle celebrates 200 years of continuous and faithful service to Bedford County. We hope you will join us in celebrating this significant bicentennial with the parish family. St. Thomas the Apostle, serving Bedford County since 1816.
I'm pretty sure that we have never talked to this gentleman. I know I've had Jesse on the news a few times, but I don't think he's ever been on our feature-length program. So we're delighted to be here. I am at our favorite haunt here for these radio shows at Hebrews, right at the intersection of Lincoln Highway and Richard Street. Jesse, I had the head of the Lincoln Highway Association in here, and I was about to say Pitt Street, and she said, nah. Now, no, Olga said, no, Highway. It's the Lincoln Highway. Right. So I've been very religious about doing that ever since. Anyway, welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to
us. My pleasure to be here. Always a nice little walk down here to Hebrews from my office, which is on the same street.
Well, I was trying to make it convenient, and I didn't think we could make it any more convenient than that.
You could practically crawl
here, so this is great. Good. First of all, I want to learn a little bit about you. I'm not a native of Bedford, so everyone seems to know everybody here all of the time if they live here, and they have lived here for generations. The boss over at the radio station says they've been here since 1770-something, so I can't compete with that to local Bedfords. But are you a local boy?
Yes. I grew up in Hindman, which is southern Bedford County. I now live here in Bedford, right in the borough, so I've been here most of my life. I went for a brief time after high school to Harry Wendelstadt School for professional umpiring. I was going to be a professional baseball umpire, so I went down to Florida for that, did a little bit of umpiring, came back here, started working for Bedford United Methodist Church, went to school at Frostburg State University, which is just over the border in Maryland. But while I did, I lived here. So other than that brief time doing the umpiring thing, I've lived here my whole life.
Did you get a divinity degree there?
At Frostburg State? No, it's a music degree.
Oh, okay.
Degrees in music performance, and that's what I was hired to do at the church.
I was their music minister. Okay.
So, yeah, music between umpiring, religion, and politics. I've done all the things you can't talk about at a family reunion.
That's got to be really interesting. They say you should never talk about religion and politics. You just have to keep quiet.
That's right.
Or baseball.
Or baseball, yeah. And, of course, in my role as a baseball umpire, you know, we weren't always the most liked people on the field.
So. I talked to people once about that. I met one that actually was an umpire for the Philadelphia Phillies, where I came from. And he said, yeah, he said, the umpires are right up there with dentists. He said,
well, or politicians,
right.
Yeah.
So, that's great. Do you have a family?
Yes. Wife, Christy. We have two boys. They're in elementary school, just starting that this week. Oh. As they go back into school, one's in fourth grade, one's in second grade, Josh and Jonah. So we live right here in the borough, and just really enjoy this town and this community.
Where did you go to high school?
I was homeschooled graduate here in the Bedford School District, so I played sports and was in the musical. Bedford was great in allowing homeschoolers to participate in all of their extracurricular activities, and I was able to do that. And then after high school and after umpiring, when I came back here, coached for Bedford football, and now I do the radio, the color commentary next to play-by-play man Sam Schuss for our local football. So I've always stayed around the program.
Well, that's super. I homeschooling is interesting. First of all, you're a relatively young guy. I didn't realize it had been around that long. I thought that maybe it was a relatively new phenomenon. Well,
when my parents homeschooled me, I'm 34 now. Right. I graduated in 2000 from high school. But when they did, it was not nearly as common as it now. And a lot of credit to my parents. They felt like it was the best thing for me at the time. Of course, it's not for everybody, and I say that openly, that you have to have the right situation to homeschool and to make it be successful. My parents certainly had the right situation and home environment for me to be able to learn at home at my own pace and help me expand my music and do some of the things that I might not have been able to do as well in a public school setting. So it comes down to whatever's best for your family, and that's the role of the family and the parents and not the government.
Well, that's a nice notion, and I appreciate your expressing that, because we don't hear that too often, especially from someone in Harrisburg or Washington. Our guest is Representative Jesse Topper, and Jesse is the representative of the 78th District Legislative District. Before we went on the air, I was asking him what the 78th was about, and since neither one of us know, we'll leave that to another day. It may be just linear, Jesse.
Yeah,
they got out to Bedford, it was like 78.
The first district is up in Erie, so maybe they just started up in the Northwest and moved around. But, of course, a lot of the districts move with redistricting, so the last time we redistricted, for instance, there was a seat that was removed from the Philadelphia area and was put in the York area. So the seat number was the same, but the location was now in a different part of the state. So after years of redistricting and moving seats around based on population, there are some pretty strange makeups of where's the first, the second, and the 56th, and that wasn't all where it started, I'm sure.
Well, if I had done any kind of show prep at all, I would have known this. But Okay, this is great. Now, one of the things I thought we might be able to accomplish today is maybe you could give us a little civics lesson about how the House operates. Now, from my high school days, I remember being told that the House of Representatives, whether it be in the Congress or the State House of Representatives in Harrisburg, are the people closest to the people. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, they call themselves the people's house, if you will. And interestingly, the oldest form of government here in the states, when we were the colonies, with the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, was our structure. The national structure of a house, a senate, and a president was modeled after what we do in Pennsylvania, which is a house, a senate, and a governor. So the civics lesson is really the same for both at our Commonwealth level and at the national level. We have a House of Representatives. There's 204 of us who are in the House. I'm sorry, 203 of us now that are in the House. And we represent the largest body in our state-level legislature. The Senate is made up of 50 members. And, of course, there's a governor in the executive branch. But in that 203, I'm in, as you said, the 78th District. We operate very much the same way as the House of Representatives at a national level, but we deal with state issues. And I always say there's two parts to my job as a state representative. There's what I do in Harrisburg, which is the legislative part. That's really what I'm elected to do, which is either pass laws or stop bad laws from happening. I probably spend more of my time doing the latter than the former.
I've always wanted to ask you guys something about this. You never hear everybody rushing off to Harrisburg to repeal a law. Mm. Do they ever undo the laws?
We do. Yeah. Some of us in some of districts like this, we campaign a little more aggressively on that. We would like to roll back a lot of laws. And actually, more than the laws are the regulations that are usually not passed by the legislature, but are imposed by these state agencies, whether it be DEP or whether it be Department of Human Services. And that's really what we need to get a handle on. The amount of laws that we pass versus the amount of laws that are introduced are very small, less than a tenth. Are actually passed. But when you come to these regulations, that's where it's a problem. And you're right. We need to repeal more than we need to add.
Because it always seems to be additive. I mean, every year you folks go back into session and you promote or pass a law of some kind. And I would think over a course of 200-some years that Pennsylvania's been around, we must have thousands and thousands and thousands of laws.
And we do, and we have. This year we repealed a few transportation things that were no longer applicable. But that's something that needs to happen more often than it does. But so that's the legislative portion when we're in session in Harrisburg. We're dealing with that kind of those kind of issues through our committee hearings, through our session days. And then back here in the district, I offer constituent services. A lot of folks that have come to my offices in Bedford and Fulton County as well they're able to cut through, hopefully we're able to cut through some of the bureaucratic red tape that we can get through anyway, help them with stuff in relation to PennDOT or any state-related agencies. And then we also, you know, part of my job is this, is going around the community and educating folks on what's happening in Harrisburg, how it affects them, trying to do my job as a liaison between the people and their state government. And that's kind of what I see my role as, especially back here in the district.
Back to the representative job. How many people are in the district, and are all districts the same size?
Yes, all districts. Well, in population, yeah. That's right. So we all represent about 65,000 people. Of course, that every 10 years when they redo the districts and they do the census, some of our district boundaries are moved based on where those 65,000 folks are lining up. Some folks get more, some folks get less, and then you have to move the district so that everybody has about that same amount. But in terms of geography, of course, it's very different. I had a colleague from Philadelphia who stopped by the other day on her and her family's way out towards Pittsburgh, and of course she looks at the size of my district geographically and just marvels because she can walk her whole legislative district. I mean, it's just a couple city blocks in Philadelphia, whereas for me, it covers three counties. I represent part of Franklin County, all of Fulton County, and most of Bedford County. So it's a lot of driving, in this part of the region. So we all represent about 65,000, but for some districts, those 65,000 are spread out over a large geographical area. For me, it's about, an hour, 45 minutes. It takes me actually to get to the one part of my district to another, the westernmost part to the easternmost part, just about as long as it takes me to get to Harrisburg.
Well, I know when you sometimes look at the district maps, they look like a Rorschach test because they're all over the place. And I remember one fellow told me once that it's a district in search of Republicans.
Well,
because of the way it's laid out.
Yeah, not this one. This one would be there's really. It's the number one Republican district in the state in terms of voter registration. Mm-hmm. So it would be very difficult to draw this map into any kind of a gerrymandered system.
Right.
Mostly what it is to find not Republicans, but to find population. When the population center decreases out west, everything moves east.
Yeah.
Now, the maps that look really bad to me are not so much the House, the PA House of Representatives, but the congressional maps. Some of those,
oh, yeah, it gets nuts.
I mean, they're cut up and look ridiculous.
It goes around rivers, comes back in neighborhoods.
In fact, we just had a committee hearing at our state government committee, one of the committees I serve on redistricting. I asked some questions there posted on my website. That was a very interesting hearing as we looked to see how can we do redistricting, how can this process work a little better. It's difficult. It is difficult to try and come up with ways to make sure everybody's equally represented in terms of population, because the population centers vary so much throughout the state. And if there's ways, we don't like to split up communities. It's very difficult. As Carl Metzger, the representative from the 69th district, he shares part of Bedford County with me. And we've joked many times that Cumberland Valley is part of his district, the Centerville area. And on a map, it looks like it connects to Londonderry Township, part of his. The whole problem is that there's this mountain that's in between them.
Sure.
So you can't really get to Cumberland Valley from his district, but yet those folks are part of his district. And those are areas where sometimes you say, we wouldn't have been very good at fighting wars if we didn't take mountains into account.
Well, and I would think, too, that we're 150, 200 years ago, and you'd be trying to do all this on horseback would make it even more difficult because of the physical limitations. Our guest is Representative Jesse Topper of the 78th Legislative District. And when we return, Jesse and I are going to get into a little bit of nitty-gritty, what's going on in Harrisburg, and to some degree, what's going on in Bedford County when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Perhaps while driving around Bedford County lately, you may have noticed our current outdoor billboards. Stephanie March, general manager of Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, knows better than anyone about our mission of total satisfaction. When we talk about our seven ways to save, we mean not only are we saving you money, but also saving you some time and aggravation. Our attention to complete satisfaction makes sure you're happy with our vehicles and service, which keeps us happy to have a loyal customer. Our seven ways to save is a process to ensure you have complete information to make the decision that's best for you when you purchase a car or truck. We encourage you to visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru right here in Bedford and see for yourself why our goal is your complete satisfaction. Visit us on Business Route 220 north of Bedford, or visit us 24/7 online at thomaschevrolet.com.
This is Bill Wirtz of the Bedford County Vietnam Veterans. You're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
We have returned to Hebrews on the intersection of the Lincoln Highway and Richard Street here in downtown Bedford. And with us today is Representative Jesse Topper. So I want to talk a little bit about the responsibility of the state. I did a little history on this, and I found out that the late Governor Pinchot was very instrumental in making sure that the roads were improved in the Commonwealth, because it was back in the days when farmers were trying to get their goods to market and they were going over these horrible roads. It was also at the time when the revolution of the new cars or the cars were coming along, and then people started to demand better highways. So what do you hear about state roads when you answer your phone over here in the district or whatever? I mean, do people call you about these things at all?
We get calls from our office anywhere from, you know, why isn't PennDOT plowing this road? And, of course, sometimes it comes down to, well, that's not a state road. It's a township road. Or sometimes PennDOT will be able to, you know, plow a township road right away to get to the road they need to plow. So we hear some of that. But, you know, there was a major transportation funding bill passed a year before I got into the legislature, as a matter of fact.
Right.
That tried to address some of the issues with our roads and our infrastructure. I mean, look, one of the core functions of government is infrastructure. I mean, that is, I believe government should be very limited, and one of the things it should be limited to is providing roads, safe transportation, because that's what drives the economy, and that's not something that an average business owner is just going to all of a sudden put in a superhighway. That is a responsibility of government at every level, township, borough, state, federal. We do have a responsibility for transportation and infrastructure. But in terms of roads, you know, that need fixed, I would say that certainly the township supervisors or borough managers, they get most of those calls, and then sometimes that will trickle up to me. Our office has a very good relationship with PennDOT. They're very responsive when I ask them to go look at a section of road that might need some work. Those guys do. They take that into account and hopefully make it a part of their plan to continue as they continue in their improvements from Act 89.
Well, I look as, and here in Bedford, how lucky can you be? We have a PennDOT facility right here in the town.
I mean, well, and look, this county, I mean, people drive through this county and Blair County all the time, and they wonder how we have some of the roads that we have in such a small area. And of course, you know, having Bud and Bill Schuster as the, you know, chairman of the Transportation Committee over the years at the federal level helped to put some of those up. But it's also, we look at Breezewood and where we connect to the Turnpike. I mean, it is a heavily trafficked area, and we need to make sure that those roads are sustainable.
I will tell you something interesting. Having lived in the eastern part of the state my entire life, I served on the Transportation Management Association, and we knew about the Schusters long before I knew about Bedford. Mm-hmm. I remember we had a meeting, and Bud came to one of our meetings to speak about highways in Pennsylvania. And all we knew was that there was some sort of, like, super guy out in the middle of Pennsylvania that had these terrific roads. No. And we want to get close to this guy about how he did it, you know. And so it was just, it really was, and then later I never dreamed I would end up living here. So now I am in the, you know, within the heart of it. So when we speak about roads, though, people take it very personally. They want the roads to be right, you know, because they see themselves paying taxes for them, or at least they pay taxes, and they assume that the taxes will be taking care of all this. So what is the new budget going to do? Are we actually going to see some physical improvements?
Well, first of all, just to close it,
new budget's on the road.
As far as the road, I would be remiss if I didn't mention also my predecessor, Representative Hess, was the chairman of the House Transportation Committee at the state level as well.
Right.
You know, so that was obviously a passion of his.
You bet.
And with Act 89 that was passed a couple of years ago, like I said, before I was in, I mean, those improvements have been made around the state. You've been seeing a lot of work done on roads, and I know the schedule is, they had like a 10-year schedule. So you're definitely seeing a lot of improvements, in my opinion, on the state roads and the state highways. The Turnpike's had a lot of work done. They're making it into a 6-lane highway, and the parts where that has been finished has certainly improved traffic flow. One of the big roads that need improvement that really it doesn't affect us directly but indirectly is 81 up in especially Franklin County area and that Carlisle area. That is run by trucks, you know, heavily, and we have to find a way to expand that, because that's a huge driver of economic of our economy through central Pennsylvania is what happens on I-81. So we need to look and see what we can do with that, and hopefully that'll be a part of the plans moving forward as well.
Well, good. We'll look forward to that. And let me just kind of move you on here a little bit to something that's been in the minds of everyone who's lived anywhere near the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and especially in it, and that was the budget process, if I can call it that, that's happened over the last 18 months. Has that calmed down? Are we going to see it move a little better this time?
So we had a nine-month late budget on Governor Wolf's first budget. It was finished. I think we completed all the supplementals and everything in March, and then turned around and had budget hearings and started the process for this year. This time we were only a couple weeks late in terms of what was passed. We passed the budget mid-July. We passed the spending plan in late June and then passed the tax code in mid-July. And I would like to say that sets us up for a good year next year, but I think it did just the opposite. I know we were trying to get a budget done on time, and we did that, but unfortunately in the process, in my opinion, we have left ourselves a huge deficit for next year that is going to be the cause of, I think, a long drawn out process. I've been telling everybody you need to prepare yourself, whether it be our human service agencies, our school districts need to start preparing themselves for what I think is going to be a very tough slog next year, because we voted, this was my biggest problem, Lloyd, with what we did. I understand everybody wanted to get something done on time, and I don't discount that. We needed to. But we passed a spending plan before we had the tax revenue to pay for it. And that's why I voted no, because when we passed the spending plan, we didn't have the tax code. We didn't have the gaming bill that was supposed to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars. We didn't have that passed. So we were missing a huge chunk of the revenue to pay for the spending plan. And when we went and voted on the revenue package, I think we're being very optimistic in what we're going to bring in cigarette taxes. I don't think we're going to bring in nearly as much, because I think people are going to be going across the border to buy cigarettes. The Senate still has yet to pass any semblance of the gaming plan that we passed in the House. So now you've got $110 million that are out there that aren't part of the budget. So when you start doing the math, we could be looking at upwards of a $2 billion hole next year. Well, there are only two ways you can fill that kind of a hole. You can either cut $2 billion from the budget, or you can fill it with new taxes. I'm going to be advocating for us to find, I still believe there are areas of the government that we can cut to get us to that point. And people say, oh, we've cut everything we could. No, we haven't. There are programs, and we kind of talked about it, touched at the beginning of the show. There are programs and departments that are out there that have outlived their usefulness for the past 20 years, and they need to go. And those decisions are tough, because that usually means people's jobs or folks who work, that's kind of their baby, that program, that state.
It's kind of like the dependency that has taken over this country. We have gotten so used to being dependent on the government for every little thing that you take something away, it becomes a major crisis. I mean, you mentioned the gaming. I'm reminded that the gaming, the cigarettes, the funding of I-80, and the liquor stores were also brilliant ideas to try to bring in revenue, none of which happened.
That's right. So, the liquor privatization happened to a certain degree. I mean, we're going to get about $150 million of revenue, but that still didn't with the wine
privatization. If they washed it out completely, they would have had a nice hit, but it never happened. So
that's right.
And the magic I-80 thing was going to happen because the tolls, and then the Fed stepped in and said no. So, yeah, a lot of big ideas, sounds like. Yeah.
But it comes down to this, and these little around the edges things that we're trying to do, a sales tax on internet downloads and all that stuff, that's marginal. There's only one way you reach the number that the governor wants to reach in his next budget, and that's an income tax. Right. We're going to have to raise the income tax if you want to meet that number. I don't want to meet that number, because I think that does nothing but grow our dependency on government, and I'm going to be fighting against that. But at some point, we have to stop thinking we live in this magical world where we're going to increase spending and increase everything the government does and keep everything the government does now and grow it, and somehow taxes aren't going to go up.
Let me ask you about one particular item of expense that really is in my craw, and that's every single time they have a school problem. And I live in the eastern part of the state where some of the schools are just awful. Every time they want to fix the school problem, they throw money at it. And all the decades that we've been throwing money at schools, nothing seems to improve. So what would you suggest we do with school money? Because that's a big part of the budget expenses, it seems to me.
Sure. It's a huge part. There are many options that are out there. We've talked about school consolidation. And that's not just a Republican-Democrat issue. Right. That's kind of a bipartisan issue. Mm-hmm. What can be done to maybe consolidate some of our school districts, maybe some of the administrative costs? Could that help save money? Up front, it might not save a ton of money, but it could help our efficiency, hopefully save us money down the road. But in terms of what we do with our education dollars, you know, look at the schools around here, and they do very well. I mean, for the most part, they score well on testing, right. Because you've got a culture around here that is trying to support these kids and what they do. Some areas of the state, they don't have that. You know, you've got a broken down family at home, or you've got, and we have that here too. Right. It's not just a city problem. It's all over. But when you break down those kids before they get to school, there's not enough money in the world that's going to make them get a quality education. You know, we have to have ways in our communities, and to me, that comes back with jobs, good
jobs.
Well,
this is that's what I mean.
It's a whole cycle.
Yeah, this is what happens, that we're trying to become the family. I mean, in some schools, they give them breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They have carrying the school, they carry them back, they provide everything. And these are parental responsibilities,
exactly.
Not that part of the state
school answer, system. The answer is always, to me, jobs.
Right.
You know, when you look at communities where people are working, where there are jobs available, everything, the quality of life, right. including the schools, everything rises to the top because people are working, people are engaged. That's what you have to have. And the only way you can have jobs is if you get the tax structure better for businesses that want to come into Pennsylvania.
All right, let's talk about the biggie, the pension reform system. Right. I mean, we're talking about real money now, right?
if it really goes into education. People say, well, where's all the money going to in education? You want to know where a lot of it's going? It's going into the pension system. And not just for PSERS, which is the Pennsylvania State Education Retirement for the teachers, but also SERS, the state retirement system for myself and those who work in state government as well. Those systems are about $60 billion, billion with a B, in debt. We have a collapse of those systems that are
Who's holding the debt? The citizens?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the taxpayers.
Right.
We're on the hook for that.
Okay.
And we have to find a way to pay that bill. That's driving the school district budget. So when the school district's saying we don't have a lot of money, and you're saying, well, man, you're getting as much from the state as you've ever gotten. You're getting a lot from local property taxes, but it's not finding its way into the classroom. It's being sucked up by this pension problem. And look, Lloyd, past governors and legislatures, I get it. You know, the teachers and the state workers, many of them did not contribute to this problem in terms of they paid their share, the state screwed up. Because when the money was good, when the money was flowing, we didn't put in our contributions as a state because the interest that we were making off the, you know, off the stock market was paying for all of that. Well, guess what? Eventually, that fantasy land disappeared too. And because people weren't putting in what they needed to put into, the system accumulated this debt. But most of us weren't in there at the time. You know, it does us no good to point fingers. We have to find a way to fix the problem. We have this debt. We have to work moving forward for a new system that's more sustainable for taxpayers. And then for our current employees and our current retirees, we need to find a way to make sure that their system is fully funded.
We are speaking to Representative Jesse Topper, and you can hear this, the passion in his voice about this subject, and I wish I had more time to talk to you. I do want to remind you that the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce proudly supports and celebrates the business community of the Bedford County region. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. Jesse, we have about a minute left. What have I missed here? Anything important? Probably I have. But.
Oh, I'm sure there's many things. But the bottom line is we've got a lot of fiscal challenges that are coming our way in Harrisburg. People have to be ready to make tough decisions. I have to be ready to make tough decisions. And our taxpayers have to be ready to support those people who are going to make the tough decisions, because it's going to be a rough road, I think, over the next year.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy day and that long walk from your office over here to Hebrews. This is your big chance to go see Jesse.
That's right.
Tell him what you're looking for. Find out what state road doesn't work right.
Plenty of folks have taken advantage of that chance over the past week.
All right. Well, you've been a good sport. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru on Route 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.